Welcome to Manager Tools. Decisions, not choices. Part 2. This cast answers these questions. How is a choice not a decision? How can I turn my decisions into actions? What do I do when I make a decision? Well, if you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening. Here we go.
It's time to admit it. This virtual world is probably going to last a while. If your team needs help with managing remotely and using the Manager Tools Trinity, consider our newest offering. The Effective Remote Manager for Clients covers how your team can increase results and retention remotely. We can help your team increase communication and trust. One virtual delivery with 3 hours of content on how to use the Manager Tools Trinity remotely. $7,500 for your group of up to 30 people, and you have the choice to bundle with Roadmap or Enterprise. Contact Maggie at maggie@manager-tools.com for scheduling options.
Right, Mark, we start talking about decisions and not choices last week. And if you haven't listened to the first part, folks, I suggest you do, because decisions are not the same thing as choices, or better said, a choice is not sufficient. You need to make a decision.
Yeah. Everybody wants to make choices, but decisions
that's the easy part.
Adult level work.
Yeah. And so we talked about the difference between choices and decisions. First thing about decisions requires communications. And then the second part about decisions, as opposed to choices, it requires assignments of responsibility. So let's get into that.
Yeah, when it comes to communication, you got to let your entire organization know, and beforehand and during and after, yeah. And then people don't realize that when you're an executive, people do understand that you're not going to have to do all the work yourself, but in fact, people think that's good until they realize that that means you have to assign responsibility. And it goes, I mean, I hate to say it, for you longtime listeners, it's Horstman's Law of Project Management. Who's going to do what? At least the first two-thirds of Horstman's Law of Project Management.
Right. Look, and we're done, because that's all you do is you tell, hey, John, you got to do this in... You're done. I mean, that's the great thing about being an executive. People just, they're like robots. They just do what you say, how you want it, when you want it, right?
Yeah. And you know, even if you have a committee or a group or a team working on something, no task actually gets delivered by a committee or a group or a team. Individuals have to be assigned responsibility to complete tasks. And so a name must be associated with every deliverable you come up with. And what happens before the name is the deliverable. You have to create a task. And as we've said before many times, we don't like assigning tasks, like, for instance, create a PowerPoint, because when the PowerPoint is created, if there's no responsibility to communicate the completion of that task, then the organization can't leverage the value of that task. And so therefore, we recommend you don't assign tasks, you assign deliverables, which means a deliverable is something that has to be delivered in order for the task to be considered complete. So you don't assign doing a PowerPoint, you assign sending the PowerPoint or posting the PowerPoint and notifying others that it has been posted to a website or a piece of shared software or what have you. Yeah, so we start with there's work that has to be done. This is part of what separates a choice from a decision. And that means we have to think through everything that has to be done. Choosing is not enough. We have to actually plan the work. You can't just say, yeah, we're definitely going to do more in Asia versus South America this year. In theory, yes, Asia's a burgeoning market for you. Okay, great. But that's just an idea. You have to then say, okay, what are we going to do to make that happen? Drucker tells us that it is the specific job of an executive to decide to make decisions. And really, the planning of the work is where this concept he's talking about comes from. If you're an executive, you're the person who has the authority to commit the organization's resources, time, money, people to a particular course of action. We can't just go around making choices and not doing the hard work of putting that choice into action. That's about you and not about the organization, not about the value the organization can create for external customers and for itself. And look, a choice you make might be right. It may make all the sense in the world, but it may be too expensive for the organization to do it. When we start trying to turn our choice into a decision doing the work planning, we realize there's just not enough money right now. It doesn't matter how good the choice feels. And there are plenty of business decisions that are made on how cool the choice is. Too often, those cool choices are considered relevant when, in fact, that's a mistake.
Would you say that relative to a choice, right? I described it as kind of a value thing, that a choice not to do something is, in fact, a decision. For example, I don't have the money. But we have lots of ideas, you and I, right?
Yeah, I mean, you could... I suppose you could make that case. The issue is, if you think it through from an organizational perspective, that would then mean communicating that. Mm-hmm. And most executives, most managers are not good at all communicating their decisions about actions that they're going to take.
Let alone things they're not going to do.
That right. They're not going to take. I would say, I think in a perfect world, the answer is yes, we're not doing that. We're not spending money on that. I suppose the version of that, or no, the exhibition of that non-choice, non-decision would be budget limitations. No, you can't spend money on that. No, I'm saying no to that. No, you can't fly there. No, you can't engage a marketing firm in Mexico City. We're not investing in Mexico this year. But communicating that systemically, most of us don't do that very well.
Yeah, okay. I'm sorry. It's more of a little semantic game I'm playing.
Yeah, no, that's okay. So look, if the organization hasn't given you the money to implement a choice, then you haven't made a decision, but because you're not going to do anything around it, and it is the doing around it that makes it a decision.
Right. This is probably what boggles a bunch of junior folks, right? When an executive says, well, you know, it can't be done, and the director's going like, yeah, it can be done. Well, the executive knows there's not enough money, right?
Yeah. The manager thinks, hey, that's not so. He's... The executive, he certainly has the technical authority to do that. It's his choice whether he invests in this, invests in that. When he says it can't be done, what is he saying? And in fact, in some cases, it's assumed, oh, no. We all know it's the right choice, but somebody up the chain has said it won't be done. And so this person is saying it can't be done. And in a way, that throws the organization under the bus. But it's not that at all. It's because that may be, in theory, the right choice, but only if the planning or the thinking through of that choice didn't include the necessary resources to implement it. That's the problem. Too many people want to get excited about making choices, but a choice requires the ability to make it happen. And so the thinking in advance has to consider resources and value and costs and so on. And look, the manager looks up and says, I've seen her do that kind of stuff before at her level. So I know she can do it. And here she is saying it can't be done. You know, the verb can't in it can't be done doesn't mean something's impossible. It means that making a certain choice into a decision, again, considering the time and the people and the money, relative to the other choices we have already made, and this is why the old joke is, how is it possible that God invented all the heavens and the earth in only 6 days? And the answer is, well, he didn't have an installed base, right? I mean, you spend money to take care of the existing customers and the existing systems and processes and the buildings you're in and everything else. And that doesn't necessarily leave enough money for all the new things you want to do. And so the reason why an executive might say it can't be done is it wouldn't be appropriate to turn this choice that we at a high level agree with but haven't thought through, it wouldn't be good to turn that choice into an organizational decision that would mean action. And look, that's why, in part, so many junior folks mistakenly crave the power of choice that executives have. Only to discover that once they get there, the responsibility for decision far outweighs the power, the responsibility of it far outweighs the power that they were looking for. And, you know, just proves that it's harder than it looks. I've told people before that, you know, the burden of command is not insignificant. Even Jimmy Buffett, I mean, the troubadour of the ne'er-do-well, lazy lifestyle, talks about being an executive after a fashion. He's got a song called It's My Job, and he says, I got an uncle who owns a bank. He's a self-made millionaire. He never had anyone to love, never had no one to care. He always seemed kind of sad to me, so I asked him why that was. And he told me it's because in my contract, there's a clause that says it's my job to be worried half to death. And that's the thing people respect in me. It's a job, but without it, I'd be less. I mean, yes, you have the ability to choose, and that then leads to decisions. And the balance of the power you feel when you get to choose, no thing is an unalloyed good or bad, except perhaps love, that you it's balanced by the burden you feel. It feels great at 10 in the morning to say, yep, we're doing X. And then you put your head in your pillow at night at midnight and go, oh my gosh, did I do the right thing? Or even if you believe you did the right thing, is it going to work out? Can you actually make it happen? It's one thing to plan a great football play. It's another thing to execute it perfectly. Another good example from popular culture, although Jimmy Buffett is probably more popular than this one of my favorite portraits, I don't know what the standards are for masterpiece, but it's a well-known portrait that hangs in the Metropolitan Museum in New York City. There's a famous portrait of a guy named Lewis Kenton. It's entitled The Thinker. I'm not talking about the statue, Rodin's Thinker. It's just a portrait of a man standing, thinking. And when you look at it, you will see this subject of this portrait, this painting, bearing the burden of responsibility versus, let's say, the joy of choice. And one of the reviews, one of the people that has written about it described the portrait of this man as restrained, not powerful, not energetic, restrained. So, you know, that's not what they put in commercials about how cool it is to be in a meeting and be the one that makes the decision. But believe me, it wears on you. You know, somebody told me once, Mark, I got 10,000 people in this organization that rely on me. And I kind of thought he was overstating it, but he wasn't overstating it based on how he feels about his responsibilities, right?
Right.
He considered it, you know, that was what he was responsible for. I wish more executives would think that way and not overhire when things are good and then have to lay people off when things are bad.
Well, yeah, we don't have 10,000 people, but you and I both felt the weight of responsibility when it came to COVID, right? When 75% of your revenues disappeared literally overnight. That's when being an executive is not fun.
Yeah, they trusted us. They trusted us that we were a going concern and they would have a job.
Exactly.
And then suddenly they were worried, and legitimately worried. In fact, one of them told me, yeah, I told my wife, my husband, I told him we'll be done by Christmas. I'm like, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, so this is a theme of this cast. Too many inexperienced executives or managers and directors looking up at being executives become enamored of the power of making choices. And then they struggle and chafe at the hard and really, frankly, boring work of whatever it takes to lay out your plan. What has to be done? Who is going to do it? What are they doing now? What will be the effect of them doing this rather than what they're doing now? What level of effort, LOE, will be required during the first and second and sixth day, week, and month of the implementation process? And that kind of comparative work is not easy. It's difficult. And I'll tell you what most people think. Well, they'll just keep doing all that and then they'll do this as well. And there's a case to be made for that. And in fact, when organizations do new things, part of growth in productivity is giving somebody more to do and then having them have to figure out how to get done everything they used to do in 100% of their time. They can get it done in 85% of their time. So 15% of their time can be spent on this new choice, which is becoming a decision. The problem is executives and managers, too many of us, don't monitor our people to know that they are now spending 115% of their time, meaning they're working longer hours. And there are certainly plenty of middle managers who would never notice that there are people are doing that, assuming we're in a salaried environment as opposed to a hourly wage environment, because the manager believes that's his or her job, to just work more and more and more and more because they crave the joy of choosing, because they think that's the path to executive power. And if you get enamored of the power of choice making, that's so good. It's exciting, right? You start to forget that every decision we make is an undoing of other choices and of other people's choices. And I got to tell you, the popular press gets excited when they talk about, you know, people doing new things. It's entrepreneurialism, it's energy, it's creativity, it's freshness. But I got to tell you, entrepreneurialism inside a large organization is a much harder choice than everyone makes it out to be. It is. It's not that your choice is a valuable one. There are plenty of value creation opportunities available to organizations today. But you start making choices that turn into decisions and you make commitments of your organization's and its resources, that's more valuable than the value your organization is creating now. Now, I'm not advocating the high seas world, which is let's not change anything ever because technically we're doing fine now. We're still in existence. But this entrepreneurialism, oh yeah, you need to be creative and embrace fresh ideas and so on. Yes, that's true. You do. But there's a difference between an idea and a choice and a decision. And if you've been in the organization for 15 years, what makes you think someone is that much smarter than you that about how the organization creates value and what ways might you be able to create more value? And by the way, I'm talking about external value, not your paycheck, right? Why would somebody with 15 years or 20 years think somebody else must know what they're doing? This is what the organization does. I'm not saying you shouldn't know, but you should know how your organization creates value in such a way that when you make a decision, you'll know how you'll be creating value. You'll be able to compare the two value creation equations, and you can make a case, a good one, for why yours is better. And that's hard work. To choose to do A versus B is not simply what you think or what seems right to you. It's what will be right 1, 2, 3, 5 years from now for everyone in your organization. People are like, this is hard. Yeah. No, we pay a ton of money for easy jobs. So and think about it this way. We do our research, and that's plenty of work all by itself. And we decide A is better than B. And only then does the true work of the executive begin, which is making it happen in a world of constraints and measures and politics and competing interests. You got the analysis, you got the choice, the decision. The choice seems trivial in the middle, but it's not even that simple because the choice is moot. The fun part, the choosing, doesn't matter if the resources can't be allocated. All of the things to be done will be done by your organization. All of your people are already fully engaged. Plans done right are not lists of things to do. They are responsibilities, people, names, and deliverables. I would argue that it might be better for somebody else to come up with the task or deliverable list. Tasks can be fairly straightforward. Managers worry about tasks. Executives worry about responsibilities, which means what we should be thinking about as executives is, who do I want to do this? Not what needs to be done. When you're thinking about your decisions and your plans, allow others to lay out what has to be done, and you should be paying special attention to who is going to be responsible for doing them. And look, think about that. That's just a natural progression of individual contributor to manager to executive, okay? As an individual contributor, we're primarily responsible for working on our assigned tasks. As a manager, we assign tasks. As an executive, we assign people. I don't know. Did I go off on a rant, dude? I'm sorry.
No. You know, I was just thinking about my own behavior over time. And I think as a high C, high D, I'm focused on the task most of the time and not the people per se, right? I think that gets you in trouble. Like, you know, sometimes, dude, you know, we won't go into details here, but there are times, even manager tools, where a great person had the wrong task. Right? It's like, why would you ever give that task to that person?
Yeah.
That's an executive mistake, right?
Yeah. Now, there are times when you choose the least bad, right? You have the resources you have. What you're doing is an imperative, and you have to assign a person that isn't right. And then what we're supposed to do is put in place controls.
There you go. But that's where I was going. Yeah. Realize what their strengths and weaknesses are and put in measures to shore up their weaknesses, right? Yeah.
Which should tell you something about how important it is to assign people, that you don't want to be choosing a bunch of people to do a bunch of things that require you to put in place a bunch of controls. If you've got the right people, this is a hiring decision, but it's a hiring decision in advance. Then you don't have to spend your time putting in place controls and measuring or checking on them, verifying them. And that frees you up to do other things. And that's friction in the organization. It's inefficiency.
Yeah, I think, you know, and people who are not at executive levels, well, probably directors and senior managers probably understand this, but decisions and deciding who does what by when, it's more than just individuals. It applies at executive level to what organization is going to be responsible for something, right?
Absolutely.
I've been in that situation multiple times where my organization is doing something. Another organization on the other side of the world is literally going down the same path I am. It's like, well, who's responsible for this, right?
Yeah, who's responsible and why are we spending twice as much money?
Yeah, exactly. So it's executive life. It's easy. Oh, by the way, people go off and do things in your organization, even when you didn't tell them to do so.
You're saying that people straggle after ripe blackberries? Come on. Exactly. No.
Yeah.
Have you ever noticed how the things we think we don't need are the things that become incredibly important to us? I didn't think I needed fingerprint recognition on my laptop, but I love it. It gives me a little jolt of joy every time I use it. We recently got an email from a new licensee who said that they bought a license for entirely different reasons, but soon found they loved having access to the show notes for all of our free podcasts. When an unfamiliar situation arose at work, they were able to go to the Manager Tools app, search for an appropriate cast, and read the show notes in minutes. They were ready to take action immediately. Get your little jolt of joy by purchasing a personal license today. Find out more by going to manager-tools.com and looking for products in the menu.
Okay, so the next thing we got to do, I said who does what, but I didn't say who does what by when. We've got to put deadlines on things.
That's right.
Yeah, who's going to do what by when? If our decision is to create value, it must be done against what I think of in my life, what I call the bitter constraint of time. When I grind my teeth, when time is misused, it the takes bitter
constraint of time. Is that a horsemanism or is that? Did
yeah.
You get that
yeah, yeah, yeah. It is? Well, yeah. That's what I told myself for the last 20 years. Nice. It's almost poetic. I put poetry in things I think the other week.
That's true. That is true.
Yeah, some people liked it. I assume that many people don't, but you know, that's okay. It was about managing, of course. I mean, seriously, as I said, I think I said in the things I think post, there's a famous writing. What's the word? There's a word for a command, which is don't sit down to think about what you're going to write, sit down to write about what you think. So my first poem that I wrote, I guess as an adult, as opposed to in school when we had to, was about managing and deadlines, actually. So look, relative to time, we're always somewhere between the forever timeline of perfection, you know, let's either spend inordinate time on it or let's plan it until it's perfect before we ever do anything. That's one end. And the other end is the immediacy of violent, and I mean inefficient and ugly and messy, chaos. One is action and one is stability. And those are two of the fundamental forces in the universe. Irresistible force meets immovable object and so on. But if we're going to turn choices into decisions, then we have an obligation to create a plan. And our executive duty is to plan. And planning is not just deciding what needs to be done, but deciding when it needs to be done. It is, you know, it's not merely a list of tasks. If you have a plan, it's not a list of tasks or who is going to do them. It's when they're going to be done against a question of when must they be done to deliver value. If you take 5 years to invade a new country because it's got to, you know, and I say invade in the commercial sense, and by then all your competitors are already there, you know, there won't be as much value. And 5 years to implement something often takes five times as much money as the 1 year to develop a plan. I mean, think about it this way. This is the way I think about deadlines. How many file folders or special projects have you had as a manager sitting on the back of your desk, gathering dust over the years? Good ideas all, but never implemented. To be an executive means, and by the way, part of the reason they weren't implemented, there was no deadline, right? To be an executive means, in a big way, to start the clock ticking. It's one thing when that never delivered project, gathering dust at the back of your desk, only affected you. But we don't get to do that for others, for 500 or 1,000 others. We don't ask our organization to work on things that don't have time as a core consideration. If you just think about what would happen to a project if there were no deadlines. Yeah, I'm working on that. It's green. Yeah. If there's no deadlines, everything's green all the time. I never thought about that before. If there are no deadlines, everything's always going to be green, except the cash register.
Yeah, except the business.
Yeah. Whatever you do, folks, this is a simple one. Don't assign tasks without deadlines. And when they're not met, that's information to you about the relative importance of other work. It's also information about how effectively you've communicated the importance and value of your choice. It may also be information about the political perceptions regarding this project. But deadlines motivate behavior. I've said it for 30 years, and I'll never stop saying it.
And then deadlines are not enough. Responsibilities are not enough. You need reporting.
Yeah. And actually, in my original draft of these show notes, I included decisions require measurements. And then I realized that, generally speaking, most executive decisions are within certain organizational constraints and existing measures. Well, there are existing measures. And it occurred to me that the reporting would essentially come within the framework of those measures. We'll do a future cast on the difference between existing measures and new measures and so on. But for now, I'm thinking of measurement of the implementation of a decision, the value creation portion of things, which surely ought to be what executives think about. We will assume that the measures are inherent in the reporting, or that the reporting talks about the measures that the organization accepts as reasonable for the understanding the parameters of the work and the value that the organization creates. And so look, we know as the executive that we're not going to be doing most of the work of a decision. There are executives who mistakenly do that. It's too bad. And we might have made the choice and we might still have to see through the decision, but it'll be other people doing the work. And that means if we're responsible for it, and other people are responsible for it too, we're going to have to keep track of all the mundane work that brings that decision, that choice, to value. I mean, it's not rocket science, right? And look, guys, there are 1,000 ways to do this, more ways to keep track of things and report on things than ever before. I'm not saying project management has gotten any better, but email and texts and Slack messages and instant messages and spreadsheets and websites and budgets and very fancy project tracking software and meetings and lists and to-dos and apps for all of those things. And look, any executive decision might require any and all of these things over and over and over again. And they can all be good. One of the mistakes inexperienced executives make about reporting is carrying forward their managerial definition of reporting, which is keep me posted. But look, folks, as an executive, we're given the power, the burden of representing the whole organization. Look, this is, I said this to somebody the other day, yeah, you can't say that. And he says, why not? I said, you're an executive. You have to be very careful about what you say publicly. You're fiduciarily responsible for the organization. That's what being an executive means. And it's one of the reasons why a lot of people believe they're executives when in fact they're not, because it's clear that the organization doesn't consider them fiduciarily responsible. Look, it's a very unpopular saying, l'estat c'est moi, I am the state. I think it was Louis XIV, meaning I'm the king by divine right and whatever I say goes. But there's a lesson of truth, a kernel of truth in there for us executives. You are the organization. And I don't mean the vulgar assumption that what is good for you is good for everybody else. That's not what I mean. What I mean is the burden of responsibility, that you have to take responsibility not only for your knowing when people tell you how they're doing on a project, keep me posted, but the organization has to know too. This is where tasks have to be deliverable so that people can let other people know that stuff is done. So reporting around executive level decisions means keeping not just you posted, it means keeping everyone posted. Well, we've said this before 1,000 times. It's not enough for work to be done. It has to be communicated to others as having been done. If your implementation team is only doing the work and not reporting on their work, everyone else's work slows down. I've said it 1,000 times. When the software developer comes to you after you've asked him or her to comment their code or to update their status 3 times weekly, whatever, all Agile and Scrum aside and so on. And they say, well, what do you want me to do? Do you want me to do the work or do you want me to report on it? The appropriate answer to that question is yes.
Yeah.
I want you to do both. You don't get to do one or the other. You're not all by yourself. You're, no person is an island unto him or herself.
Yeah. And folks, just 35 years ago, I actually said that to my manager. Maybe the stupidest thing I ever said.
You did.
Yeah. To Louise Charles. Louise, who actually
taught you so much. Like
the one who turned my career around by telling me what a jerk I was.
Don't be an idiot. Yeah.
Yeah. So most of you listening are way too smart to ever have said something like that, but not all of us are that smart.
Yeah. And then people say to me, somebody sends out, we make a decision on ops on Friday morning and there are deliverables, people have to do stuff. And for the next 2 hours, I'm like, okay, I talked to that guy like I said it would, and here's what he said. I'm sending this out to the 3 or 4 people that are involved in the work product, the package that came out, the set of deliverables that came out of the meeting. And then a couple hours later, I'm doing this and that. And I'm on the phone 2 hours later, and somebody says to me, somebody who works for me says, or works for the org, says, yeah, I'm getting a little annoyed, all the status updates. I was not polite. I said, oh, you're annoyed. I'm doing my job and you're annoyed. Well, we can get rid of that. In my head, I'm like, I can get rid of your annoyance. I'll do my job and you don't have to be here to be annoyed by it. You know, I sit around worrying a lot about whether or not this or that or something else is done. Somebody said they would do it. I don't know that they've done it. I can't do my thing until their thing is done, and they haven't deigned to communicate to me that they've done it. So don't get annoyed that there's all kinds of status communication around here. That's a part of everybody's job. Oh, the Slack channel gets filled up. That's a good thing, actually. You could have the opposite, which is no communication, and then you always have to ask everyone else. But asking takes more time and involves more people than the person doing the work actually communicating about the work. So it's not enough for us ourselves to know that whatever work is proceeding apace because we're the executive and all the roads lead to us like we're the center of the spider web. And look, you when you think this stuff through over 50 years of tens, thousand, million managers and executives doing this, you end up organizational theory-wise in a situation where our work as an executive is not to receive reporting to regularly oversee the team's success and to be told how things are going. Our job is to proactively communicate about our decision and its implementation and the status of that implementation. This is why you see executives, good ones anyway, constantly providing updates, over-communicating proactively, not just to the people who are working on it, but to people around the people who are working on it. They use that proactive responsibility. They're eager to have people surface issues and make changes. You don't just finish a task and then throw a ball through the hole saying, now I've told the one person at the top that it's done. And that one person is the mega mind, the mastermind that knows everything. No, the one person who is ultimately responsible for the implementation might know a good portion of it. And they are constantly seeking information about how things are going. But then they're constantly turning around and giving that information back out. The more people who know more things are more likely to do more good work. I mean, when you see an executive constantly briefing on what the status, it's not that they're seeking popularity or you know, look, I'm in the spotlight. That's completely intentional on the part of the thing to get asked questions and to have discussions and to find out even more about the status of things. It's inevitable. If you want to be effective, your job as an executive is not to receive reporting. It's to proactively communicate to your organization about the status of things it's working on, which will help speed things up rather than slow things down.
Yeah.
Sorry, dude.
Wow,
I get man, excited about stuff like
there's
that.
There's a lot we've talked about over the last 2 weeks.
Dude, yeah. So let me summarize. And you know, I this cast will always go down as one where people, I know people write me and say, I wish it were more actionable. And I'd say, yeah, I think you have a point there, but I've got to lay some groundwork before we can talk about more actionable stuff. And this is one of those casts that's executive tools feeling. And you know, I could say do X, like you have to brief people, but if I don't lay the groundwork, I think some people would say, why am I doing this? So look, let me summarize. And there's more cast to come, but if we were, you know, as long as this one is a two-parter, if we put in all the details of all of these things, we'd be here for a week. So summarizing, we bet you thought you wanted to be an executive. I mean, the power to choose, that's so cool. But it's not that easy. Heaven knows how to put a proper price on its goods. Everybody wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to die. To be an executive is not to be allowed to choose. It is to feel the burden of decisions and the myriad responsibilities that that entails. Choices are easy. Deciding is hard.
Well said, my friend. Hey, folks, if you want to be an executive and you're not yet, that's okay. And you can absolutely do it. None of this stuff, it's not rocket science. You just need to learn what you need to do and take massive action to make it happen. So don't be discouraged. On the other hand, if you want to be executive and that's where you're trying to go, then you ought to know what you're in for. So,
yeah. And I'll tell you something else, since we live in a world that's full of people, all different. It doesn't matter what your skin color is, or your gender, or your sexual orientation, or your age, or where you were raised, or how you were parented, or how your schooling was or is. To be a responsible person, to be responsible, held responsible for the jobs and futures of thousands of other people, to be an executive with the outward trappings of it. Please don't get enamored of the trappings. They're not what you think they are. All of this responsibility is available to all of us. It takes hard work. It takes sacrifice. Let us hope that the sacrifice is not relative to your faith and your family. And it is at times incredibly difficult, and it is incredibly rewarding. And if you believe you have something greater to offer the world, and I suggest you probably do, it is noble, believe it or not, to seek to become more responsible, not because you want it, but because others will benefit from it. It is noble to seek to become more responsible for greater, to have greater purview over decisions as opposed to choices in order to serve the world. And you can do that inside an organization. You don't need to be your own person to do that, because organizations are the greatest achievement of mankind. So, if you are so inclined, good for you. And that's part of the reason we're here.
All right, my friend. Thank you.
Thanks, partner.
That's it. We'll see you next week. Have a great one. So long.